Hi, this is Susan Taney and Kathy Poblowski from Lost Dogs of America Radio Podcast. Our guest today is John Garrido of the Garrido Stray Rescue Foundation in the Chicago area. John is also a lieutenant with the Chicago 16th Police District. Along with his wife, Anna, John started the Garrido Stray Rescue Foundation.
So, John, we have some questions about your foundation. We just want you to kind of go ahead and elaborate and tell us what you do, when you started, why, and what exactly does your foundation do?
Great. And thank you for having me on the show this morning. So the Garrido Stray Rescue Foundation kind of grew organically out of something that Anna and I had already done for many years. You know, anytime we, you know, came in contact with an animal in need, we would always do what we could to rescue them or to save them. In particular, when we would go on vacation, a lot of the countries that we would go to would have a lot of strays, and we would either try to just to feed them if we could, or we would take them to get them medical attention there. And then one trip in particular, back in 2014, we were in San Pedro, Belize, and a dog started following Anna down the beach. So we walked off the beach into town, and he continued to follow, and we went to a grocery store and got him some food and were feeding him. And that's when we noticed that somebody had attempted to neuter him in a kind of an archaic way. So we wanted to take him to a vet. Well, the vet wasn't open. So what we ended up doing was taking him and putting him in our room overnight. And that's when Anna named him Pedro, because we're on the island of San Pedro. And I've since learned that when your wife names a dog, it's pretty much going to be your dog forever. So the next morning, it was recommended that we take him to the Humane Society. Well, we did that, and unfortunately at that time they took him from us and said that he actually escaped from their facility, and they were the ones who were doing that procedure on him. So we left. Ultimately, we came back about an hour and a half later to see if we could get him out of there by making a donation. And that's when, while I was talking to the woman, Anna discovered him in a crate laying on his side, wailing in pain. While we were gone, they had actually castrated him and didn't do it properly. And he was essentially dying. So we were able to give them some money and get him out of there and get him to a vet. Well, all of this I had been posting from the time he started following Anna on Facebook, and people started to follow what was going on. And a friend of ours in Chicago, Patty Culleton, set up a fundraising page for us for his medical care. Well, within 24 hours, we raised $2,500 for his care. And we decided that we wanted to figure out how to get him back to Chicago for us to adopt him. Well, to make a long story short, we ended up having to leave him there. About a month later, I was able to fly down with my father to meet some friends of ours that we met on Facebook, Hector and his father. The four of us rented a car. We drove to the southern border, where some friends that we met in Belize took him on a two-hour boat ride and met us at the border of Mexico. And then we drove him through the country of Mexico to the border, where Anna drove from Chicago down to the southern border and crossed into Mexico and met us there. And then we drove him home. Well, by putting that all on Facebook, that whole trip, that whole journey, it developed this pretty large network. And from that, what we decided to do was use that network for animals that would come into the 16th district. Because quite often, when an animal would come into the station, we would the process would be we just inventory the dog, essentially, and send it to animal control. Well, what we started doing was posting pictures of those dogs as they came in on Facebook, and we were finding that within minutes, sometimes within, you know, 30 minutes or 15 minutes, we were able to find the owners, because the network had just grown so big and predominantly on the northwest side. So from there, anytime a dog would come in that would need medical care, we would start taking to our vet at Niles Animal Hospital to see Dr. Sackis, and he would either do procedures for free or discounted. And then some dogs that would come in that would be extremely matted, we started taking to the doghouse, which is a grooming and boarding and training facility, and they would also donate their services, and we'd get these dogs cleaned up and ready. And so what that sort of grew into was the process of whenever a stray dog would come in, we would take care of that dog to make sure that it got whatever medical needs that it needed or grooming needs, and keep the dog safe until we were able to find the owners. And that's essentially what Garrido Stray Rescue Foundation is. Our primary focus is to get these pets back home to their families. And while they're in our care and custody, we make sure that they get whatever it is that they need, any medical care, from just basic shots to major surgeries. We take care of all of that. And then we just do everything that we can to try to get them home. Well, since then, and that was about 2017 when we actually became an official 501c3, our network has grown dramatically. And now we're not only partnered up with the Niles Animal Hospital and with the Dog House, which is at 6460 North Milwaukee. We've also partnered up with Dog Den, which is another boarding and training facility in Forest Park over at Harlem and Franklin. And with that, and then through the network that's grown and foster homes, we're able to, any pet that comes in now, we're able to post it, share it. We post it on Helping Lost Pets and Lost Dogs Illinois. We get the medical care that it needs. We get them groomed, and we get them into a safe place until we can find their owners. Wow. From that, I know this is a very long story to get to what we do.
That's great.
From that, we partnered up with Animal Control, Chicago Animal Care and Control, and now we are actually a stray hold rescue. At the time, Susan Russell saw what we were doing and came up with this great idea of turning us into a stray hold rescue. So essentially, we're bound by the same laws as Animal Care and Control. So when a pet comes in that we take into our care, we have the same 3-day stray hold that the Animal Care and Control does, unless they're chipped or tagged. Then it's 7 days from the date that we send out a letter.
Okay.
Well, what that allows us to do is for the dogs that become our custody. So some of the dogs that we know are abused or neglected, it gives us a shorter window to be able to take care of that dog, and it becomes ours, and then we can get it into a good home. Although we have that ability to adopt the dog out in 3 days, we don't usually do that. Most of the time, we usually give it up to 30 days where we still continue to try to find the families, because not everybody's on social media. And so we actually have volunteers will go out and put up posters and flyers, and, you know, through networking, sometimes it's taken 3 weeks to a month to find some of these owners. And it's just really, really, it's incredible how much it's grown over the span of the last couple of years. I think just on our page, we have almost 9,000 people that are following us. And then if you expand it to there from my personal page and others, we're probably up around 15,000-20,000 people. And when we post a dog, it gets shared so many times so fast that we're fortunate enough that we actually have a return to owner rate of approximately 82% to 86%.
Wow.
Which is huge. And if you compare it to Animal Control, which by no fault of their own, they're in the, I think they might be in the high 20s or low 30 percentile right now. And there's
dogs.
A variety of reasons for dogs,
yeah.
Right, for dogs, yes. And there's a lot of reasons why that is, based on their location or people just not knowing where to look and whatnot. But this network has really, really done well in helping to get these animals back to their homes.
Wow. And what a lot of great work. And I got to just think that for somebody that has lost their pet and it ends up with you, it just has to be such a, you know, going to reclaim an animal in a government facility can be very intimidating, and they often know that it might cost a lot, and there's not an awful lot of personal help or service provided. So, boy, I'm just sure that your reclaim rate goes up just because they know that it's somewhere where somebody's actually cares, you know. And I'm not saying that they don't care at the Animal Control, but like you said, it's such a big facility, so imposing, you know, and a lot of people don't even know where to go or how to get there, you know.
Correct. And they're doing better to get that word out, but they're just so inundated. I mean, they take in we actually took in 2018 295 dogs and several cats, and that's a lot for our small rescue compared to, I think, Animal Control probably took in 15,000.
Right. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
So, I mean, just the magnitude, the volume that they have coming in, that's why that return to owner rate is so low. By no fault of their own. It's just the way it happens to be. And most of our animals are coming from the northwest side. That's a thing that, you know, people will think, well, dogs can roam pretty far distances, and they can usually in a rural setting, but in an urban setting, as soon as somebody sees a dog stray, they grab it.
Right.
They pick it up. There's dogs sometimes we found that were actually picked up in front of the house where they just got away from.
Yeah.
And then they're brought to home.
Yeah.
And some ask, well, how come you don't do cats? And it's not that we don't, we do, but people, if you're driving down the street, don't necessarily see a cat and stop the car and say, oh, there's a loose cat, because they don't know, is it an indoor cat? Is it an outdoor cat?
Right.
So it just happens to be just dogs happen to be the majority of what we deal with.
Right. Wow. That is amazing work. That is just really a great story.
So, you know, and it really is because of the network, right? By working together with Lost Dogs Illinois and our partners, the boarding facilities and the vets, you know, and that's even expanded. Other vets are now coming on board where they want to help out, and other groomers are coming on board. Like Rub-A-Dub just stepped with us, and Edison Park just joined up with us. So I mean, we're getting more and more people that are they want to help and they want to participate in this, and it really really it's making it easier to do. Although it's still an incredible amount of work, but it's still it's very rewarding.
So, John, what are some of the challenges you face in your day-to-day work with lost pets?
So the most difficult thing, while the network was working very well, the frustrating part of it is just it's never-ending. There's just so many pets that just keep coming in, and it's incredible. Even the number of – we'll do microchipping events. We'll partner up with Lost Dogs Illinois to do them. And we chip a lot of animals, and there's a lot of chipping events around the city. And you can even go to some of your local pet stores and get them chipped for fairly reasonably prices, like $5 to $15. And we're still, I would say, probably 90% of the animals that come in do not have microchips and no tags. So it's just, or if they do have a microchip, it's not registered or not updated with new information if somebody moved. So that makes it extremely difficult to get these animals back home. And it's such a simple, easy thing that can be done. And every police district in the city has two scanners that were donated to us. I believe it was a Safe Humane along with Lost Dogs Illinois.
No, it was Found Animal Foundation.
Oh, okay. Found Animal Foundation.
Yeah.
And so we all have the scanners. Every veterinary office has a scanner. There's even some firehouses that have them. So it really, really is an easy way to get your pet back home if they get away.
Right. And we face that all the time. Like that's, you know, a big part of our mission is that education about microchips and making sure that they are registered and kept up to date. But yeah, like you said, it's a long, slow process because there's still a lot of people that don't realize that there is something to do other than just putting the microchip in the animal, that there's something.
Right. And social media has been a huge, huge, huge help to be able to get the word out. Talking to like Gloria Listener at Famous Fido, she's been doing this for 47 years, and she said the flow of animals coming in has not slowed. I mean, it's incredible the number of pets that get lost every single day. It's just that we happen to notice it more because of social media.
Right.
But thankfully, because of awareness, we're able to get more of them home. But it's still incredible just how many pets get lost every day.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think people realize that 60% of the intake at City Chicago Animal Control is 60%. And that I've been following that since we've been doing Lost Dogs Illinois. And that is consistent. I mean, 60%.
Yeah, right. It doesn't change.
It doesn't change. Yeah. It's amazing, you know.
Right.
You're saying 60% is lost pets as opposed to owner surrenders.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
It's just, and it's a variety of reasons, you know, kids leave a front door or a gate open, people will leave their dogs in a backyard without being in the yard with their pet, and their gates are easy to open, and somebody may come along and open their gate to cut through, and then the dog gets away. And then there's theft, where people will steal the dogs for a variety of reasons. If you leave a cute little Yorkie in the backyard, somebody grabs it and picks it up, and then they go and sell it, all the way to horrible things like bait dogs for dog fighting. So,
but you said, but you don't think that's a really, I mean, I, Can we just kind of like, just kind of expand on that? Because you and I were talking about this last night, that we, that's a small percentage, a very small percentage of.
It is a small percentage for sure, but it still happens. We right. see the video all the time right. of somebody just reach over a fence or right. open a gate, just take the dog because the dog is friendly. You know, and then there's some people that still to this day, people will let their open their front door and just let the dog
right.
think, oh, just go right. out in the front yard and then come back to the door and scratch to come in and the dog is gone. And we have repeat offenders where you'll see them, they'll pop up on Facebook. Oh, I can't keep my dog anymore. So I'm selling it. An owner will find and say, hey, that's my dog. And they go and try to get the dog back. And then it's tough to prove because there's no chip or there's no way to prove that that's their dog. And these owners are actually buying their own dog back.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Oh, yes. A small percentage, yeah. but it still happens.
Yeah. Right. Well, uh-huh. I just kind of, because you know that you and I talk about that every time that someone, you know, says they have a lost pet, they said it was stolen. And I guess, so that's what I was just trying to say that, you know,
right.
you know,
they're not always.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things we're finding is that, you know, as society as a whole, as we're rescuing more and more dogs, which is wonderful, you know, less and less are being put down in our shelters nationwide. But a lot of those dogs that may have been put down previously because they didn't meet certain behavioral criteria are now actually being saved, which of course is wonderful. But a lot of these dogs come with challenges. And one of those is that they may be very fearful. Or, you know, may have come from an abusive situation. And so they're not your typical, you know, just friendly dog that's going to hang around if it gets out. If it happens to get out, it's gone, you know. And
right.
and
right.
And so a lot of, you know, a lot of dogs that are getting, and for a lot of people that are adopting a new dog may have never owned one of these fearful dogs before and just don't really understand that you have to be, you know, dealing with a high risk or a high flight risk dog is a lot different than dealing with a real friendly dog. And you have to be prepared. You can't just open the door, you know?
And there's a reason why you're rescuing the dog and not adopting a dog that was, you know, bred in a puppy mill is because it got away from its previous owner.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's the dog's a runner. It takes
right.
off.
Right. Well, we wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about the Good Samaritan law that recently failed to pass in the House in the state legislature. So, Susan and John, can you tell us, because I know you both worked on it, what would this law have done? How would it have helped our mission? And what can we do to help get it passed next year if it comes up again?
Well, both John and I agreed that there is nothing in the law, in the Illinois law, in regards on what a Good Samaritan is to do when they find a lost dog. And John gets a lot of phone calls. We get a lot of messages that that someone has found a dog and they've kept the dog, but they have not done their due diligence to find the owner. So John and I met with Senator, and I'm going to, how do you say his last name, John?
It's Senator John Mulroe.
Yeah, Mulroe. And we met with him, and he introduced a law that we thought was pretty well worded, didn't we, John?
It was great. It was absolutely well written, and we collaborated on it for a while. It's not something that was just thrown together. There were a lot of interested parties involved to make sure that we got the language right and to make sure that everybody's, you know, rights were protected. But like you said, we see it all the time where people will, hey, I found this dog and I'm looking for a home for it. And it's like, well, wait, you need to at least try to find the owner, make some effort to find the owner. And there just is nothing in place. There's nothing in the statute that requires anybody to do anything. You can find a dog and turn around and put it on Craigslist and sell it.
Wow. Wow. So this law protected against that. It actually laid down some guidelines for what a finder needed to do.
Right, and nothing too crazy. I mean, just, right. you know, really just basic stuff, just something that gives you some guidelines of what you should do when you find a dog.
And so I understand that it actually overwhelmingly passed the Senate, and then it got hung up in the House. And so can you explain what the objections were in the House? Like what made some of the legislators vote no?
Susan? But basically, their concerns, in my opinion, were just unfounded. I think there might have been some politics at play here, because they either they didn't read the statute, or they just, like I said, they had some ulterior motive, because there were things like, well, it would be too far for somebody to drive to go. Well, here, Susan, can you list what the requirements are, what we require asked for people to have to do?
Well, basically what we were asking is that they contact animal control and or the police department of, you know, the dog, filing a found dog report. And then we asked them to be scanned.
Wow.
And I mean, those are just two really basic things to do.
Yeah.
And right, and that was basically it. And they were like, well, and they're thinking like, well, if it's a rural area, it might be too far for them to drive. Literally, all they have to do is pick up the phone, call their either local animal control or police department and say, hey, I found this dog. Here's a description of the dog. Here's my contact info. If somebody calls in for the dog, I have it. And let them know, you know, is there some way that you can send somebody out to scan it? Or can, you know, animal control, like for instance, the animal control here, they have scanners on the trucks now that can stop.
Yeah.
That's essentially it. Now you've done your due diligence. You've actually made, you know, some authority known that you have this dog that you found. It's not overly cumbersome. You don't have to drive, you know, you don't have to leave your house if you don't want to. And then they shot it down. And like I said, their reasonings were either it's something like that, it's too far, or they thought that there was some cost involved with having it scanned, which is not the case. It's a scanner. It's just you run it over the dog. There's no fees at all. They have to scan. So like I said, the reasons what they were bringing up didn't really make sense to us. So my assumption is that there was just some other politics at play. Maybe there was something that they wanted passed that didn't get the votes that they needed. So now this was payback. I don't know.
Right. That could very well be. So do you think that it will be reworded for next year to ensure that it passes? Or do you think there will be an attempt to just put it through again the way it's written now?
I think what we're going to do is take another look at it to make sure that if there is anything remotely close to valid that they brought up, that we address it. But then at that point, we're going to have to reach out to the public to basically call these state representatives and ask them to vote for this bill. I mean, just to get it passed, because I think it's a very good bill. And it's not that we're going to be out hammering people because they didn't do something. Oh, you didn't call, so we're going to nail you. It just gives us something to fall back on if somebody tries to abuse it. If you have that person that's out there, you know, maybe even taking dogs and then trying to, you know, sell them again.
Yeah.
So it just gives us a little more in law enforcement. It just gives us some teeth, something that we can actually do. Because right now, it's basically a civil matter. Right. If, you know, we get a call on it, you think somebody has your dog or gave your dog away, the only thing you can do is sue them civilly. There's nothing that we as law enforcement can do to intervene and help.
Yes, and that is very intimidating for a lot of people, you know, because they feel like they don't have the money to pursue that, and a lot of them give up before they even begin, and then it just exasperates the problem because the finder gets away with it, you know, and either keep the dog or rehome it or sell it, like you said, and just becomes a bigger and bigger problem. So, well, I wish you guys luck there in Illinois getting that passed next year.
Thank you.
Well, I want to, John, we're going to wrap up things here, but I want to remind everybody that Greedo Stray Rescue Foundation and Lost Dogs Illinois will be in an event with Senator John Moreau, on Saturday, October 5th. The location has not been determined yet, but we'll be doing free microchipping and ID tags. And John, can you tell us how people can reach your foundation and how they can help you in your mission? And
right,
go ahead.
Right. So you can reach out to us at GreedoStrayRescue.org is our website, or you can find us on Facebook, Greedo Stray Rescue Foundation, or you can always send us an email to GreedoStrayRescue@gmail.com. And you know, we can always use the help. For example, we spent almost $80,000 in veterinary costs last year. So but here's the fortunate thing, because our network has grown so much, we are able to actually cover that through donations. And the nice thing about it is we're able to make our decisions, our medical decisions, based on need and not on cost. And we love that. If a dog needs a surgery, for example, a dog, her name is Marge, she was brought to us, an offender was being arrested for selling drugs to the police. When they went to her apartment, they found she had five children that appeared to be in need. So they were taken to DCFS, and this dog was brought to us. Well, the dog was emaciated and starving, and it had actually eaten two baby bottle nipples. Jeez, one was in the stomach and one was in the intestine. So they rushed her in for immediate surgery, and they removed 3 inches of her intestine. Unfortunately, that didn't hold, so she had to go back in for another surgery. The first surgery was at Niles Animal Hospital, and then they said, you know what, she needs some specialists. So we went to Blue Pearl in Northfield, Illinois, and from there they took out 60% of her intestines. But when the doctor came into us to let us know it was going to be, it could be as much as $19,000 for this procedure, you know, we were able to make the decision and say, you know what, yes, go ahead and do it. And we saved this dog. She's doing great today. She's outstanding. We're, you know, eventually going to be putting her up for adoption. But we were able to save this dog. And many out there will say, well, with 19,000, how many other animals could you have saved? That may be true, but through this dog, we went from 6,000 people that were following us on our page to over 9,000 people on our page. So by adding that extra 3,000 people, that is going to help us help other animals, absolutely, a lot of other animals as well. Absolutely. So I believe that first priority is taking care of the animal for whatever it needs. And the second is it happened to work out that it expanded our network, and now we're going to be able to help more animals with that. Yep. So we can always use the help.
That's great. Okay. Anything else that you'd like to share with us?
No, thank you very much. We really appreciate you having us on the show.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So this is Kathy Poplowski reminding you to never give up. Lost dogs have been recovered weeks, months, and even years after they went missing.
This is Susan Taney reminding you that not all stray dogs are homeless. Remember to always assume that a dog you find has an owner somewhere looking for them. We hope the tips we provide will help you find your missing dog. You can visit our Facebook page, Lost Dogs of America, or our website, lostdogsofamerica.org, for more tips to help you find your missing dog.
Thanks for listening.